A move has been made in the American League West, and it is a name that we have brought up before. Good morning, Metroplex. Happy Friday to you, the 14 of you out there on the roads actually working today. Man. I swear, DFW's already gone to the four-day work week. No one works on Friday.
That's right. That's kind of sounds the way it is.
Is it just like an ongoing rotation during the summer of who's taking their week off, though? Like, is it just like there's always going to be like 15% of the Metroplex taking off a week?
We are getting close to the end of summer. You only have kids go back to school.
Kids go back to school here in like 2.5 weeks.
Yeah. So, like, this is like your last kind of getaway time.
Rangers, Braves kick off game one of their series tonight. There's still probably going to be a lot of, man, when you just think about what TBS did.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think of in imagining the number of Braves fans that'll be there in the stadium tonight.
Actually, that's a really good point.
You think like, it'll be a decent amount?
Should be. They have a pretty good following.
25%?
Yeah, I mean, like, they have... So the Broncos have a huge following because of, like, they're the only, or they were for a long time, like, the only team in kind of that whole region, right? That whole Rocky Mountain region. So they got, like, Montana all the way down to New Mexico. The Braves are the same in the South. Like, doesn't matter. North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, all the southern states. They control that. And then you throw TBS in there, which, what a wild thing to start your shows at 5 after. Everything was 7:05, 8:05, 8:35. Remember that as a kid? Like, everything started 5 after for some reason. That's how TBS was. WGM with Chicago, the same thing.
Yeah, I can't figure that out why they would start. I mean, unless that's just the Ted Turner news background, because a lot of news things will do 5 minutes for news at the top.
6:30 pregame tonight on this radio station, 7 o'clock first pitch. The Seattle Mariners have acquired first baseman Josh Naylor from the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, and this was somebody, and the Diamondbacks are going to be that team that is offloading. And this was somebody that a lot of people had pinpointed. You know, could be a target for the Rangers, could be a target, one of the bigger bats that could go. And, you know, Seattle makes the first strike. And this is kind of like, hey, you know, we know that the Astros have kind of taken charge of the American League West. They want to get in on this. And this is a guy who's batting close to 300. Bat like 290 for the year. You know, pretty decent player. He's come up with some, you know, home runs in big spots. You know, his OPS is only just over 800. But he does put the ball in play. And that's he's not a bopper. He's a big guy. You
speaking
know,
of big guys,
he's not a bopper though. He's not going to hit you 50 home runs. But I mean, this is a solid bet.
Yeah, it's one that I mean, the names that have been floating around the most for a bat the Rangers could go get, it feels like, have been Josh Naylor, and then it was Ryan O'Hearn at Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Those have been the ones that we've seen the most. So I mean, yeah, it sucks that bat is getting traded within your division, especially a guy who. In 23 was somebody who got MVP votes, 24 was an all-star, and then 25 has been playing decent baseball. So that's a frustrating thing when you get into the own division. There may be a replacement name, though. We may have a really familiar replacement name. So the MLB Power Rankings came out at ESPN yesterday.
Cover your ears, Peyton.
And, man, you can just go ahead and play Miley Cyrus as the climb, because that's what the Rangers are doing. They just keep climbing up these power rankings. They're back up to 15 now. Steady climb. They were like down to 21, I think, a couple weeks ago. So up from 18 to 15 this week. But the most interesting thing about these power rankings is the name that Buster Olney suggests the Rangers might trade for. He says, with Jake Berger and Jock Peterson on the IL, executives with other teams speculate that Texas will add a first baseman before the deadline. Whether it's someone like the D-backs' Josh Naylor, who has since been traded, or maybe the Nationals' Nathaniel Lowe.
Oh, baby!
A Nate Lowe reunion. He is, by the way, the change of scenery has done no good for him. It's not anything that's jump-started his bat again. He is looking at across his slash line, all three numbers are the worst of his career.
What a stupid ass.
Yeah, he needs to be back here. He needs to be thrown in the middle of this lineup.
No.
Because Jake Berger's not it.
Let's get something better than Nate Lowe. That's not going to do anything.
Berger had been fine for portions of this year. Like, he ended up hitting a little better as the thing went along. I would say this. If you look at their top 9 hitters on Baseball Reference right now, as bad as this year has been for Nathaniel Lowe, he would be 4th on the team in OPS out of their 9 hitters. That's how bad things are. And his OPS is 689.
I think he's got more home runs than Seager. He's 21st in the in baseball and runs batted in with 62.
Everything has
RB's but, eye, according to Corey Majors.
He has a negative WAR. He's at minus .1 to be on the season to this point. The problem is that his strikeout rate has shot up. Consistently throughout his career, he's been about 22% strikeout guy. He's 28% this year. His whiff rate's up. His bat speed's down 2 miles per hour. There's a lot of issues with Nathaniel Lowe.
That's not something you want to get into.
All right, so that's what's happening in the American League West, and you're talking about us getting another big dumper?
Another big dumper, potentially. So SI had the some of the predictions and the best fits for Braves catcher Sean Murphy, Padres, Giants, guards, and the Rangers. Now, the Rangers, they don't have the Rangers getting any of these players that are on this list, but this is the original big dumper. This is Sean Murphy. Now, Sean Murphy's got a 2.5 WAR. He's a catcher. For reference, Jonah Heim's got like a 0.2 WAR. All right? So that's a big gap. I mean, those two wins, if the Rangers get those two wins, they're already like in the wild card.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're only, what, a game and a half out of the wild card, 2 games out of the wild card. So, I mean, that's not nothing. That's not nothing. A 2.5 WAR is pretty good. And he's not a great hitter. He's not a great. He only hit like .230, but his OPS plus is like a .127 this year.
Why does he look like Jonathan Lucroy after life beat him down?
He does something. Look like Jonathan Lucroy after life beat
like,
him down.
Like that's after Jonathan Lucroy just got depressed or something.
That's a very good reference. But,
totally forgot about Jonathan Lucroy.
This is the guy they call the big. They have. He's got a dumpy. This is the guy, and I set the stage. I hope he has it in the fan. I always got it ready. This is the guy who got hit by the pitch that every girl knows about, where he just stuck his butt out and the whole butt jiggled. And the ball shot over into the dugout. You remember that one?
Yeah.
That's a great. I saw that with the first time. Holy cow.
Tightened it up, stuck it out.
Yeah, just tighten that butt up, pop those glutes out there. Like a quarter it bounced off of.
Hopefully we'll have more credible discussion over trades with Steve Phillips, former general manager at 9 o'clock this morning. Well, never mind. On the home of the Rangers, 105.3 The Fan.
This would be, though, if you were to add Sean Murphy, again, we're just talking about they like their thick boys. That is their style up there.
Did President Trump just end NIL? What happened yesterday? What executive order did he sign, Bob?
Okay, so I am going to need to be...
It is the Save College Sports order, okay?
No, it was like President Trump saves college sports.
Yeah,
I think he like threw his name into it, of course.
Yeah, so this is something where Trump signed an executive order yesterday that essentially blocks third-party pay-for-play payments to athletes. So they can still have their various... payments when the schools are allowed to pay directly to the players, that's going to kind of become the primary now. But the third party payments from boosters, agents, other people like that, that's done. They can still have endorsement deals with companies, but now that's also going to be the idea is that's going to be filtered through a like portal where they can, like this is a different NIL portal. This is where they're going to be able to like submit stuff in advance and get approval and everything. This is basically just throwing up a bunch of red tape again.
Yeah.
This is completely anti-athlete. It's completely anti-free market, if that's what your end game is. I think this is a joke. This is letting the NCAA off. This is giving them the General Motors bailout again.
It's very good for non-revenue sports and women's sports. It's not great for like Texas and Ohio State, right? And these factories that have gobs of money. Because, like, yeah, you can't, like, now, let's say for now, right, if...
But this is an attempt to bring, like, more control, right? Like, some lines.
It's supposed to be
toothpaste back in the tube. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, well, they're bringing, so, like, obviously it requires expansion opportunities for scholarships and college athletic competition and women in non-rev sports. Like you said about the third party and pay-for-play stuff. So, right now, if Texas had a player they wanted to get, they could say, hey, come here. Here's $500,000. Post some tweets. This is a fake charity. Post some tweets about this. You could do that. Or like not even a fake charity, just something that like doesn't mean anything. I think what this is gonna set the stage for is they become direct employees of the university.
Which is fine. But is also like completely against what the order like the order itself that's been done, like the current policy position of the Trump administration is that they do not become employees.
Like this is going to require them to become employees.
That's why I say this is they are trying to tighten this up to where they can kind of this is a college, this is an NCAA lobbying push to get things back to where they want it.
Is Nick Saban happy today?
Yes. This is the start. Now, what they want Congress to act on it. They don't want just an executive order. They want laws in place that will codify a lot of this. But it's not a policy fix. It's a power play. It is a bitter organization that they can't, you know, keep people under their thumb anymore. And that's what this entire thing is about. And it's, I don't know. I think it's gross. It's NCAA corporate welfare.
All right, let's clean up just so we can see if we were right about these sports events, some ratings news. I don't know why ESPN just continues to lie about their ratings that come out. They tried to say that there was historic viewership for the WNBA All-Star weekend, that the numbers were up like 89% and then 158% for Saturday night versus Sunday and the game. Christine Brennan, USA Today, friend of the show, female sports advocate, said, "Why does ESPN continue to mislead its followers? The viewership was not historic. It was a huge drop from last year. Of course, Caitlin Clark did not play. We already saw ticket prices reportedly go down by like 46%. In 2024, 3.4 million watched the game. This year, it plummeted to 2.2. So ESPN trying to cook and fix the numbers that they, I think, even delayed coming out, which RJ always tells you is a sign.
They waited 5 days to put these out. So, yeah, like I said, it's like down 30-something%. The ticket prices went from $120 to $64, down 48% when it was announced that Caitlin wasn't playing. Again, they don't have a league. They have a player. But I think ESPN could absolutely sit here and say, all these networks could, if you had 4 million viewers last year and 2 million viewers this year, but 2 years ago you had 400,000, you could still say, hey, we're up big time over the last 3 years.
Yeah, and I mean, it's no different than the Adam Silver trick of, well, yeah, the ratings are down from 20 years ago, but we're higher in the night than we were. We're winning bigger than we were.
Did Scottie Scheffler cause a golf tune out?
Not really. It was up. The final round had 4.1 million viewers, which was up 21% from last year. Peaked at more than 6.1 right around the 130 to 145 window. NBC and Peacock averaged 3.5 million during the entire weekend, which was up 24%. From last year. So despite the fact that he was running away with this thing, it seems like people tuned into the British Open at a higher, much higher rate than they did the previous year.
Bryson DeChambeau is catching some heat as microphones caught him where he ended up in some mess, right?
Yeah, he was in some of the higher grass, which is very common to find at the Open and Lynx Golf in general. And Bryson was in some higher grass. And what they have these volunteers who work at the golf course. I guess they don't even work there. But they're on the course. And they're called ball spotters. And they go, when you hit a shot, you'll see golfers point right or left. You'll see somebody with a stick pointing right or left. And they go, they find the ball, and they hold it for you. They put a flag down. So this guy spotted Bryson's ball. Bryson walks up to it, and that's where the video starts.
Where is it? Thank you. You can move out of the way. Thank you. No, you're fine. Right in front of me.
So there was you can get out of the way.
You can get out of the way.
You can get out of the way now. And people were kind of coming at him like, all right.
He's like standing right in front of me.
This whole Bryson persona change.
I got it all on record.
All a big fraud.
I love that promo.
Is this whole persona narrative?
I don't perception? Think so. I'm trying to write this off to frustration. Not your best moments.
Right,
but I'm buying the. I think he's in the Happy Gilmore Subway commercial.
Yes, which comes out today. Ooh, the Happy 2
Netflix
comes out today.
Yeah, my hot exciting Friday night planned.
There you go. He could have said it in a much gentler and nicer tone.
Yeah,
especially when they
said the ball spotter was there for like 2 seconds. That's according to some reports.
It was. I mean, he was not there very long. Bryson had literally just walked up to it. He was like, is that it? Okay.
I still think he's executed a great transformation from, you know, douchey, nerd, kind of being the rebel in the sport, to being really likable.
Yeah,
dude.
Look, he was more brosif. You know, he was brosif before. Now he's just kind of regular dude. So you had a bro little mentality.
How surprising was Brian Schottenheimer's Cowboys hire? Even he didn't see it coming. We go back inside the Star on the home of the Cowboys commercial-free expressway and our final ticket giveaway of the week next on Sean and RJ, 105.3 The Fan. Good morning, Metroplex. We are commercial-free on the home of America's team. We are heading out to training camp, Oxnard, California, on Sunday. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. Brought to you by Treeline by Hillwood, a stunning new master plan community in Justin, Texas, that RJ Choppy was raving about the other day.
Dude, it looks great, man. The entryway, you got to go over this like kind of quaint looking bridge, a covered bridge. I don't know, the bridge that has a roof on it, whatever they call those.
What is quaint exactly? Like what kind of a bridge are you describing when you say that?
I think it looks like a bridge that George Washington would have burnt down at some point.
Oh, okay.
Like an old bridge, old timey bridge, right? That you would see like in, you know, the far reaches of Montana or Vermont, you know, something like that.
Sure.
Anyway, RJ likes the neighborhood. Yeah. We are also brought to you our training camp coverage by Wild Fork Foods, wildforkfoods.com, Elite Game Day Grilling Favorites, and Reliant AC. Brian Broaddus will join us from Cali at 8:40. Are you all packed up?
No, haven't started. I got to do some laundry. You know, so we'll get the laundry done this weekend, obviously, and then pack. I'll start. I think this is going to be the smallest I've ever packed.
Are you trying to go with a carry-on only?
I'm bringing two suitcases.
Oh! For what? Oh, your alcohol?
Yeah.
Your substances coming back?
My substance is coming back.
What are you saving per travel bag?
It's not saving.
By the time...
It's the availability.
Oh.
A lot of what we could buy in California is so, they call it allocated, like they don't give it. And it's California, nobody really drinks good bourbon out there. You could buy.
So their lack of manlyhood benefits you.
Yes, absolutely. But they still get an inordinate amount of the supply.
So what is it?
Like the brands?
Yeah. What can't you get here?
I can't get, it's very difficult to get like Eagle Rare at regular $40 price. You could find it, they'll mark it up $200-$300. It's very hard to find it regularly. So I get that. There's a bunch of other stuff that I could find there that's very hard to get here.
Okay.
So I just buy it there at regular price. I bring it home.
You bring it home or Red brings it home?
Last year, I brought it home last year, I think. I brought it home last year.
Has Kristen packed you up?
No. No, no, no. No, Kristen was feeling under the weather yesterday, but I told her.
All
I was
the like, mildew in the car?
Yeah, I told her. I was like, knock that S out. I need to go somewhere, so you got to get this stuff packed, okay? And I was like, just take an Advil and get over it.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Our girls are just partying. They have their whole lives planned.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. There could be no guilt trip over us going to California because they already got two events planned out of the 4 days, the 5 days.
I was
going to
say this.
As soon as I get dropped at the airport, she's going to a brunch.
A brunch already.
Oh, yeah.
That's his
a brunch. They got a concert.
You know what?
Maybe a sleepover.
Have her drop
a
you
pool
off early.
Party.
Have her drop you off early. We'll go to the Admiral's Club, get some free food. And
ooh.
Drink. Oh, baby.
This is, yeah, I didn't even know about that. She didn't even say anything. So we've got this like shared calendar app we use. And I just saw some notification pop up on my phone. I was like, what's this? And it's like brunch with Amanda. I was like, oh, okay. I guess you're just going to be living your best life. And yeah, she's going to the concert. I don't want to hear a word from Kristen this week about nothing. In fact, I'm gonna do the reverse that she usually does to me at camp. I'm gonna be hitting her up and I'm gonna be like, it's just like whenever I go out of town, you don't ever want to talk to me and it makes me sad. I'm gonna do that to her now. Living your best life at the concert.
Let them have fun. They should live their best life. 877-881-1053, Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line. We are commercial free with how Brian Schottenheimer got here.
I thought this was a really interesting article from Michael Silver the other day. And Michael Silver is...
Oh, by the way, speaking of Brian Schottenheimer, apparently on the KNC Masterpiece today. I thought they were joking. I thought they were pranking. No, Schottenheimer on KNC today.
They just they keep snatching up everybody's favorite guests. That's what they've done. They've done it 3 times now. So they've set a precedent. I think clearly we need some level of revenge extracted on them somehow. I don't know how. We'll have to figure it out. But Michael Silver had a great article over at The Athletic, I thought, where he is, Michael Silver's a he cannot write just a quick blurb article or anything. If it's a Michael Silver article, this is 30 minutes of stuff that was in large part probably scribbled on a notepad and stuff that he got in face-to-face conversations. He is one of these true, like, storyteller journalists that's still out there. And Silver had covered the hire of Brian Schottenheimer. He wanted to find out, all right, what is it that led to Brian Schottenheimer getting this job? What's the story behind it? And so I think we got some details here that we didn't previously have regarding the Schottenheimer hire and how everything happened. It opens up, he kind of paints the picture of who Schottenheimer was 15, 20 years ago when he was a hotshot candidate. He said, as an NFL offensive coordinator at 33, the son of a coaching giant was following what seemed to be a natural course. On this day in 2007, Dolphins owner Wayne Huizenga had come to New Jersey with two other team executives to talk to Schottenheimer, who called plays for the Jets, about taking that job. Ultimately, Schottenheimer decided, you know what? Nope, don't need to take this one. Not worried about it. He had turned down another coaching job that had come up to him. It was the Buffalo Bills. He had been offered to interview 3 years later, and he said, nope, no thanks. I don't need it.
It was just going to be a Ralph Wilson handshake to formalize it. It was done.
Yeah, and he said, I was a little bit naive. This is Schottenheimer talking to Mike Silver. He said, I was a little bit naive. I assumed it would always happen, but what I've learned is it's never guaranteed. And so that's something where he's now spent. You go to Georgia, that was a bad situation. The Seattle situation was good, but there was clear tension there with Pete Carroll.
So he goes to Georgia, right? And Mark Richt has him come to the house. And Schottenheimer leaves to make the drive back to Nashville. And like 20, 25 minutes down the road, Rick calls and he's like, let's just do this. Turn back around. Let's finalize it. And Schottenheimer's like, okay. Calls his wife. Hey, we're going to Georgia. And she goes, cool. How much you making? And he's like, I don't know. I forgot to kind of ask. So now he goes to Rick and he's like, by the way, how much does this pay? He tells him Schottenheimer has a humongous lump in his throat because of the pay cut, the haircut he was going to take from the NFL. And he's like, Mark, I can't do that. I can't take that type of pay cut. So he has Mark Richt call the university. So it starts off. He's like, I was just so lost. I was in such a bad headspace. I was just scatterbrained. That was a perfect microcosm of where I was in life, screwing up the salary with Georgia.
Nobody wants to coach Georgia anyway. Nobody wants that.
I mean, I think a lot of people do.
maybe now. Back then.
Well, Mark Richt was actually fired later that November, and when he got fired, because of the awkward conversations Brian Schottenheimer had to have to get the money bumped up, then it was pretty easy to then say, all right, Schottenheimer, you are out too.
You go.
We're done with you. So he had found himself in kind of a weird spot. Went to Seattle, worked with Pete Carroll. There was a lot of tension that existed there, but he's clear to tell Mike Silver in this. Pete Carroll was foundational to me. I have a ton of respect for him. That's something we've heard from him a lot and genuine, that he really does respect Pete Carroll for all their differences. He feels like Pete Carroll helped make him a better coach today.
This was the reawakening of Schottenheimer's career.
Yeah.
This helped save his career and his philosophy.
Yeah, and he said a big part of it, too, was the connecting with people that Pete has, which has clearly become a big headline for him.
Pete's a great. I mean, look, Pete has done things that very few have done. Like, he's one of the few that have succeeded at both levels, at college and the pro. And he was much, much better with New England and with the Jets than they will ever give him credit for. Like, go look, those teams were not very good. I think he was like, I think he had a winning record with New England right before Bill got there, and with the Jets, he was not bad. He just wasn't given a chance.
By the way, we haven't mentioned this today, and sorry for the side distraction, but just to rule out any Cowboy interest, Christian Wilkins cut there in Vegas. His $35 million is now gone. Good player.
You know, he's a good player. They should call his agent and say, hey, what's up?
Oh, no.
Why don't you bring... they would have to call his agent anyway because they've got to call him to negotiate Micah Parsons' deal.
Muffaletto.
Yeah, if you're a good player, Muffaletto, there's a good chance that you're going to be represented by David Malou. That's another reason why it just makes sense to go ahead and get Micah's deal.
But is this a huge difference maker that could end up on a team? Is he damaged goods? Is he still rehabbing?
He's a really good player. The fact that this will naturally make teams go like, yeah, okay, hold on, wait, what's the deal? Like, why is it? What was so... why were the perspectives so different 1 year later from like handling this injury situation 1 year after signing a big deal. Why is this perspective so different now? That's
Cowboy need.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they signed Osa, though, so I mean, I don't know that they would then contribute that level of money again to defensive tackle, but I mean, that is a position that's really important to Matt Eberflus. When Brian Schottenheimer, we're reading this article from The Athletic, Mike Silver's profile piece on Brian Schottenheimer. When Brian Schottenheimer had started kind of the let Russ cook movement and was really advocating for him to push the ball downfield, he says that during a mid-November road game against the Rams, his final season there, Wilson looked capable of scrambling for a touchdown, but pulled up and attempted a high-risk end zone throw that was intercepted by cornerback Darius Williams. Afterward, Carroll was upset and told Schottenheimer, "I don't recognize this offense," and mandated a shift to a lower-risk, run-heavy attack, and that kind of started what would ultimately be the divorce there. Then he obviously goes to Jacksonville, has the weird experience that 1 year with Urban Meyer in Jacksonville. So when he got to Dallas, a big part of it was coming in here and just...
Which, by the way, Urban Meyer goes around the room with these NFL assistants, and he's like, "What the hell have any of you ever won?" He's like dressing down his assistants, disrespecting him, and Schottenheimer, according to the article, goes, I've won everywhere. I've gone.
Yeah, pretty sure.
But his family, he was basically sitting next to his father, who's sick and ill, didn't want to take the Jacksonville job. Urban Meyer would not leave him alone, and his wife and mother basically talked him into the Jacksonville job. They're like, "You're getting Trevor Lawrence. Okay, you're getting a once-in-a-generation type talent. You have to take it." Against his better judgment, he took it. Big mistake.
So Brian Schottenheimer ends up taking this assistant role, this role that's basically a consultant. It is a cool gig that I think they've had over the years here in the last 4 or 5 years, where they bring in an offensive coach to work with the defensive coordinator. And that offensive coach's job, and Brian Schottenheimer's job a lot of times, was, "All right, Dan, you know, you're playing the Buccaneers this week. Okay, here's how, if I was the offensive coordinator of the Buccaneers, I would draw up an attack to get after your defense." And then that kind of gives him the perspective of, all right, where are we maybe vulnerable to the mind of an offensive coach? Because you think differently when you're on that side of the ball. Yeah. And so it's a cool job. I think the defensive coaches have felt like it's helped them. I think Schottenheimer and others who have done that, that feels like it's helped them and level them up.
And Dan Quinn is the other one that Schottenheimer is credited, along with Pete, for the resurgence in his passion.
Yeah. And
outlook.
Yeah. And he is somebody who, I mean, they come from the same tree. It makes sense. Like Dan Quinn and Pete Carroll together, working together. But he talks about how he ends up getting the offensive coordinator job, something that at first Dak and others maybe were like, "Okay, is this really what we want? We just lost Kellen Moore. We're big fans of Kellen Moore." But we've all heard that story referenced before from Schottenheimer about the time that he pulled Dak after an interception in practice. He's repeated it a few different times. We've never gotten details of like, okay, what happened? We just know, oh, we had it out with each other. So Mike Silver talked to Dak Prescott, and Dak said, "One of our first times bonding was after I threw a pick in a training camp practice. He said he took me out and I was bleeping mad. He's like, 'Well, you threw an interception.' And I go, 'Well, isn't it a bleeping practice?'"
Yeah.
It says an animated conversation ensued and Prescott remained angry. Afterward, the two men shook hands and talked it out. Prescott says, "I was heated and wanting to play. And it was more of like, when do I get a chance, my risk, or when do I get to chance my risk versus reward? But it was a great moment of, hey, if you want to pull me, that's the standard and I've got to eat it. I can't throw picks. I understand exactly why you took me out. We connected over our standards, our love, and our passion for the game. After that, it was a vibe." And that was kind of what triggered them to have a good relationship that they don't talk about a ton here, that they don't reference much here, but that's what started the week 5, week 6, come to Jesus, we got to change this offense in 2023. And that they had already built that relationship to be able to have that credibility with each other.
I mean, Dak's in the right in that. I mean, like, you've got to throw picks and practice to figure out what you can do and what you can't.
So at the end of last season, things had obviously not gone great. And this is where Brian Schottenheimer got the job that he was not expecting. He had already made up in his mind he was leaving. He had told Mike McCarthy that, you know, he expects you're going to get a contract extension. So he says, "I want to call plays again. I need to go do something else." He had already talked to two coaches, apparently. So he'd spoken with Mike McDonald from the Seahawks and Aaron Glenn with the Jets, and had talked about the idea of going and being their offensive coordinator. Two places he was familiar with, the Jets and the Seahawks, probably the two places he was kind of most associated with over the last 20 years.
Go to Sam Darnold and Justin Fields with his toe.
So before heading back to Tennessee with his family, Schottenheimer had an end-of-season debriefing with a group that included Jerry, Steven, and Will McClay. And it was something that was an exit interview, essentially. He already thinks he's going somewhere else. So it's like, all right, let's lay out on the table what exactly I thought went wrong last year. So he spoke with them, spoke candidly about what he felt went wrong and how he thought the situation could be improved. After a couple hours, he thanked them, wished them well. Steven says, usually that's the end of it, but obviously we wanted more. We were all sitting around and said, maybe we need to start considering Shoddy as a candidate here. When the Joneses and McCarthy couldn't agree on a new deal, the team announced it was moving on and began a formal search. The next day, Schottenheimer's phone rang with Blue Star Innovation Partners flashing on the screen. To his surprise,
we got that call about a year ago. No, joking. No, we didn't.
To his surprise, the big boss was on the line. Schottenheimer recalls, I'm like, what's up, Jerry? And he's like, let's see what this would look like. At the very least, I don't want you to leave. I want you to stay here, be my play caller, and be the offensive coordinator. But let's talk a little bit more in depth, which is kind of some of the reports we'd heard that maybe he's interviewing for offensive coordinator, maybe he's interviewing for head coach. Soon he was back in the building, but this time he was in a suit. In addition to Schottenheimer, the Cowboys interviewed Kellen Moore, Robert Saleh. They list all that off. Said one thing that worked heavily in Schottenheimer's favor was his institutional knowledge. The Cowboys aren't a typical NFL organization, essentially run by the Jones family and a tight group of longtime confidants while perpetually in the glare of the spotlight. Will McClay says he knows the building, he understands the people, and then he understands the players. He knows the lay of the land. He knows they're going to talk about us in the media and all the S that goes with it.
Yeah.
And then Steven Jones said, the more we talked, it just felt like our guy was right underneath our nose. And that was this whole section here where they really lay out the conversation he had, what Schottenheimer's mentality was walking into it, the evolution from the Cowboys on it and how they pitched it, and then getting back in there and the benefit of knowing the organization. I think that's a huge admission, something that we've always known, but a huge admission from the organization on the record of, yeah, knowing how we are here is, that's going to give you a boost.
Yeah.
If we know you and you know us, that gives you an advantage. And it makes sense why the only two, it felt like, non-Rooney Rule candidates they interviewed were Kellen Moore and Brian Schottenheimer, two people who had been here.
Just think about, and I'm not taking any shots at Mike. Again, appreciated every Friday, 6:30 with us. He was fantastic. Better than Jason as an interview, not even close. Imagine Mike year one and what he thought about the opening presser in Oxnard the other day versus Schottenheimer the other day, right? Brian's been here, so he kind of knows the scene in the circus, as Will McClay also dropped in that article,
yeah,
versus someone brand new to the scene and having all that chaos hit.
Yeah.
That's a familiarity.
And that's something that I think McCarthy, he would definitely say it off the record. I believe he did, and I believe he would, and I believe he has said it on the record. That was the biggest challenge he faced, was the first 2-3 years, especially walking in here, was adjusting to, this is not Green Bay anymore. Like it's just, it's a different operation, and it runs differently. There's nobody, this is how I've compared Brian Schottenheimer. He is that candidate for president who it feels like they've been running for 20 years, where it's like, okay, you may feel like
folks.
He doesn't check your boxes in this way or that way. Like, fans may not love certain aspects of his offense or his history, but if you're telling me, like, in terms of preparation for the storm that is Dallas and what it is to operate within it, it's really hard to find somebody without head coaching experience who will be better prepared to understand it. That was the argument for Witten. Witten knew this. And so Witten, it's like, yeah, he's a first-time coach, but he's going to get a leg up on one of the biggest challenges you hit walking in the door.
Mm-hmm. And now, of course, Dak is working with Shoddy as his head coach. And yesterday he was asked about working in Brian's offense.
Tons of fun. Already having fun. Nothing's better than this game of football. It's always given me such an amazing piece. And there's been different years, different times. It can get tougher, and you can sometimes forget that. But keeping that at the forefront of your mind to have fun, I think, is what leads it. And Shoddy's a guy who has fun. We're going to compete our ass off, but we have fun. And I think with that, what having fun is, allowing everyone to be themselves. And that's what we encourage, is to be yourself. And as you said, I've having those different sets, the different formation, the different looks, that's the way that I've seen the game and I've always seen the game. So the more of that we get, I encourage. And, yeah, sure, I might not be as fast or quick as I once was, but trust me, I enjoy still running the ball. And there's a time, there's a place for it. And getting the ball into guys like CD's hands today early and watching him, you know, take a three-yard pass and make guys miss and get down the field, or whether it be George on a five-yard route or flipping it to Terp or any of these backs and watching them go make guys miss and have fun. And then I think one of the great parts of that we're continuing to preach is about covering down, right? Covering the ball. And you see the energy from offense and defense. But what that allows you to do is celebrate with your guys as well. And the handshakes, right? All of that's fun. And you have to keep the game fun. And Chadi does a great job of leading this group, leading this team, and leading this offense to make sure that we're doing that and allowing guys to be themselves in every aspect.
Brian Broaddus will join us from Oxnard at 8:40. We will be out there on Sunday with your home of America's team. Worst Take is coming up
at
8 o'clock. I can't wait for that. Where is Hulk Hogan on RJ's Mount Rushmore at 8:20? That's inspiring his outfit today. We got Steve Phillips, former NFL GM, at 9 o'clock and a brand new morning show training camp song at 9:20. Loaded for the rest of the show in what has been an electric week, in my opinion, including these.
God is great. Beer is good. People are crazy.
All right, Tolos, that's right. Right now, call number 10 at 877-881-1053 wins a pair of tickets to see Billy Currington and Kit Moore on Friday, August 1st at the Pavilion at the Toyota Music Factory. That's call number 10 at 877-881-1053.
That's why I was late getting back in here. I was trying to cram in singing the song for Peyton to play, and I couldn't get it bounced in time.
I started to listen to some of the this is going to be my weekend music material, probably.
Like, oh, Billy?
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so easy listening. He is awesome. Whoever wins those tickets is getting a great concert, because he is awesome catalog.
Let's get to the junk drawer.
Did you know that Benjamin Franklin invented the junk drawer?
Junk it!
Start us off, Ralph.
Have you ever made out with your delivery driver?
Twice.
This would not be considered a make-out. This would be considered sexual assault here in this case. But a delivery driver thought differently. Let's head to Carmichael, California. We're going to California this weekend.
California.
Let's go to California. Where Sabrina Banks is sharing her experience. Hopes it doesn't happen to anybody else. So there was a delivery driver that came to her home. And this was driving for Walmart. Captured on camera. Well, she was at her friend's place. So she goes downstairs to pick up whatever the delivery was. And you can see the carport there in the background. And the driver gets out of his car. She signs for the delivery. And then they kind of sit there talking. He gazes at her. Puts his arm around her.
Oh.
Pulls her close.
Uh-huh.
And plants one.
Looks like Mahomes' brother.
Yes. I want to kiss you.
And according to her, he deeply gazed into my eyes, had my arm. It was almost like he had control over me. So she reports this.
Yeah.
And the officer who responded, Sergeant Amar Gandhi with the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office, said maybe it's a cultural thing. Maybe it's something innocent. Maybe there's more sinister to it.
What?
And we have to figure this one out.
I didn't know.
It sounds like he needs to be fired.
Right. I didn't know Eskin had moved to Sacramento.
All right.
Maybe that's what he means by cultural, like a Philly thing. He didn't know.
So they're trying to find out. They're trying to find this guy. He faces sexual battery charges. The officer said what happened here is completely unheard of.
He's on the run?
Can't find
him?
They're tracking him down because they're going to go through the third party app and everything. Yeah. But they've got to get a handle on him.
And aren't we getting new female selections on ride shares?
Yeah, that is. I think Peyton had that. Right?
Uber is basically Uber has decided that they're going to give women the opportunity to basically sync up or pair up only with female drivers. It's a protection for women who feel uncomfortable riding with a man in an Uber.
I think that's probably pretty smart.
It makes sense. Yeah. Like I mean, if you're talking about now, if it was a policy that we're only pairing women drivers and women riders, I would be like, this is stupid. Like the assumption that like every man is going to be some predator or something. I hate that. But if you're telling me like a woman who doesn't feel comfortable doing it and wants the choice on there, sure, okay. If you want the choice, go ahead.
Are you an optimist or a pessimist?
Me and myself, I would say I'm a pessimist. Where do you guys come down?
Oh, RJ is optimist.
Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic.
What do you think I am?
I feel there are things you're optimistic about by default, but then there are things that you're not.
Yeah. It's hard to pin you down.
Generally,
yeah.
I'm going to say you're pessimist.
I don't know that he's a pessimist. I think he's like
FAF
guarded.
Pessimists. All pessimists are realists. That's what it is. The ones who are just dressing it up. Those are the optimists.
Jerry Jones is an optimist.
And we have research to prove that. So if you are an optimistic or pessimistic person, it says something about the way your brain works. So a new study out says that people, and this is from Scientific American, people who are optimistic generally have the same brain patterns when thinking about the future. So like the way their brain fires and the stuff that they can watch on imaging when they are thinking about the future, optimists universally, almost to a T, it operates the same way. The brain functions the same exact way. The different neurons fire the same way. It's not that way at all with pessimists. Pessimists' brains are like snowflakes. Each one of them is different. So there's only one way essentially to be optimistic. Your brain functions one way as an optimist, and there are a million ways to be negative is basically what this is telling you. And that to me almost suggests that optimism is going to inherently be you're choosing to block out what's actually out there. The factors that are telling you, well, this could go wrong, this could go wrong, this could go wrong. So it sounds like you have to override basically every command in your brain that says be worried about this to just say, nope, I'm going to be happy about it. I'm going to be positive. And your brain functions in that one direction. But otherwise, if you're a pessimist about some stuff, in general, your brain is going to be different from one person to the next.
Pepe, you're optimistic? More optimistic than pessimistic?
Yeah, more optimistic. If you tell me something bad's going to happen, I'm like, I'll immediately jump to like the positive. You know, no, well, you know, like if, like for example, if we're going to the casino or something, you know, and there's bad weather, I'm like, well, it'll pass. It'll pass eventually. We'll make it away. We don't have to stop our trip just because of bad weather.
I'm a wallower. I'm a wallower in bad information. Like, there's been two times right now, two times this week when I was just in a bitter, nasty mood. Now, the good thing I think that I do is I announce it. So, like, I tell Amanda, I just got this news. This just happened. I'm in a terrible mood. I don't like it when people are in the terrible mood. They don't tell you why.
Oh, that's the worst.
And then you have to get it out of
where you feel like you're the one that's causing it, or it makes everything uncomfortable.
Yeah. So I'm a wallower like in bad news. Like I'm probably going to be, in a bad mood and, you know, throughout the weekend, because of things that are happening in this building.
I would have, I was going to ask you yesterday. You lightened up, but when we first walked in, you seemed kind of quiet before the show started. And I was like, I think he's in a bad mood. And I was going to ask you something about it at the break, but then you lightened up. So I was like, oh, I guess he's not.
Well, one had to do with my kid's school. My daughter got sent home for like a day and a half, and I didn't feel like she needed to be sent home. So I was furious over that, and I let them know about it.
Good.
And then I got a text message. It wasn't terrible news within the building. It just wasn't as good a news as I wanted. That put me in a nasty mood. That, like, my day from 3 p.m. all the way up until 9 or 10 just went to hell. Misery.
Wednesday into Thursday?
Yeah, it started on Monday. On Monday with a text from the boss. Monday at 3 p.m. Everything was all good. And then the school's like, come pick up your daughter. She's sick. I'm like, I know she's not sick. Like, I'm not going to get all into it. We made up yesterday. We had a good talking conversation. And then today, just ticked me off all over again. Bobby, right before the show, he goes, like, should I have not told you that until after the show? I was like, no. But I'm so professional, I don't think anyone could tell until I'm disclosing it right now.
No, I couldn't even tell during the break that it had lingered. So I thought you were pretty much past it. I guess that's because you're an optimist and your brain just works that one way.
Poop like a pro or the luckiest?
No, it's because I'm thinking I'm going to get my way still somehow.
There we go. You want poop like a pro or the luckiest SOB in the world?
Lucky.
All right.
I hate poop.
This Massachusetts dude won the Powerball twice in the same night.
In the same night?
Yes. He forgot he played a ticket earlier in the day. And he went back to the store, played the same numbers, which are his general numbers, his own numbers that he plays every week. Right? And he won both tickets.
So here's my only question. Was there another winner?
Yeah, like, do you win a different amount?
Because otherwise it's just he's splitting the jackpot with himself. If there's a third winner, yeah, he just, like, swiped extra money that he wasn't going to get.
So what he got was, it's like, so you know when you win the Powerball, I don't know how, I would say you know when you win the Powerball because we haven't won it.
Oh, he didn't win the jackpot. He won, like, one of the $1 million ones.
He won a million flat rate.
Yeah.
So he won the million, because I guess he didn't get all five. Is it five numbers in the Powerball or the four in the Powerball? He didn't get all of them. He got, like, the $1 million flat rate. So he won that twice in the same night. He forgot he already bought a Powerball ticket, and he won it twice. This is right up there with the chick who got a hole-in-one in her first golf outing in Canada. First time on the course. And you can see the photo of the guy next to her. He looks like he died inside. Looking at her, he's at this fake smile, looking like he died inside because he brought somebody to the golf course. First round ever, hole in one.
Do they show, like, do they have video of this?
Of the hole in one?
Yes. I'm just wondering how many different people can just say, I got a hole in one the first time I saw it. And if, like, you just get some people to play along with you, then you can get a story written about you.
Look, I film every par three.
Just in case?
I record every par three.
I know those ones in Michigan you film for sure.
Wow, there you go.
That was a hole-in-one.
Yes, it was.
877-881-1053. It's the junk drawer here before Worst Take on Sean and RJ.
All right, so there's some good news. There's been a GoFundMe set up by the federal government. You can now help contribute to pay off the national debt.
Oh,
no joke. Yesterday, the federal government announced they will be accepting Venmo payments from citizens who want to help pay off the national debt. The Treasury has begun accepting the Venmo transactions as contributions toward the debt, which currently stands at $36 trillion. This is...
How much money would each person have to give?
There's going to be people who... They're going to get revenue.
Absolutely.
They're going to get money.
Absolutely, people will do it.
It's kind of genius, but, like, it doesn't specify because they said they've reached out to the Treasury to get some answers. I would hope at the very least you would.
How many people in the world, roughly?
Well, 7 billion.
7
in the world.
Billion in the world. There's 330 million in the U.S., I think, is what it is. But, man,
How many? 330 million?
Yeah. I would hope you could at least, like, write this off or something. Like, there would be some sort of tax benefit to it. But otherwise, this is just basically a GoFundMe. Like,
hey. $109,000 per person would wipe it out. In the United States.
$36 trillion? How many zeros is that? 1,000,000,000.
So it's trillion.
Billion.
Why would I ever help contribute towards something that's never going to get wiped out? I don't even view it as real. I know it's affecting me in ways.
It's not real.
It's like, man, sure. Yeah,
it's real.
But you'll have people.
It's real, but it's not real, too.
It's real. So here's the thing is that when you get the. There are going to be people who get. I don't know how much they'll get, but they'll definitely get money off of this.
No doubt.
And they'll be able to. I just think it's hilarious that, like, this isn't even your tax or anything. They're just like, hey, like, it's almost like the you're at the drive-thru and they're like, do you want to round up to help the federal debt?
Yeah.
Like, if you just contribute, just a few cents.
What will be the biggest contribution? What will be the biggest Venmo?
Somebody will give millions. Not even Venmo. I'm sure some big donor will be like, I want to help. I'm pledging $1 million to the debt. Here you go.
No way.
This is like, it's such a dent.
I'll bet you a million.
It's such a small dent. It's like, you would not even, you'd be wasting your money. You're throwing your money away.
All right. That's the junk drawer. Trying to give you some laughs every Friday, commercial-free expressway with our final concert ticket giveaway of the week here on Sean and RJ. I think this is going to be an all-time worst take. Is it the G-Bag Nation? Is it RJ Choppy? Is it a bunch of podcasts? Or the Fan After Dark? Find out next.